Good morning. I'm here to present some of our work on the distribution of prevalence estimates of people with disabilities across national surveys. This work is related to our efforts on the statistics and demographics RRTC. I have no financial relationships to disclose. Okay. So this was mentioned in a previous presentation. In 2008, per federal mandate. Oh. Okay. So, can you hear me now? In 2008, six self-reported difficulty questions were mandated as part of the, 2010 Affordable Care Act, but they were developed in 2008 and they began to be implemented in all national surveys that included people with disabilities. These questions were related to impairments and limitations in vision, hearing, walking, cognition, and activities of daily living. More recently, these questions have begun to be recognized in the published literature as a way to measure disparities and inequities across surveys and domains. There was a paper by Brandt et al. That actually took several surveys, most of which were included here, and looked at the ability to use these questions to consistently identify areas consistent with the ICF as a way to begin to unify our study of disability. I think you're going to see this slide several times in these presentations, but these are the six questions. They come direct. This comes directly from the Census Bureau website, which the Census Bureau, along with the American Community Survey, developed and standardized these questions. They were part of an interagency effort that was ongoing at the time. I think it's important to note, while these questions have standardized language, they appear at different places in the survey, each survey. They have sometimes different qualifying language. So I'm going to present data from the American Community Survey, the Current Population Survey, the National Health Interview Survey, and the Survey of Income and Program Participation. Some of those surveys ask these questions on a family level, or a household level. Does anyone have difficulty hearing? Is deaf or has difficulty hearing? Or in the American Community Survey and, for example, the NHIS, they ask that on a person-by-person basis. Does this person have? That type of phrasing is relevant because previous research has shown that generates statistically different results depending on how you tweak that language. The CPS has priming language for an entire section. So it then goes into and says, before these questions, it says, the following set of questions are going to ask you about your function, and that tends to change results as well. This is a slide from a recent paper by Barbara Altman talking about the intended use of these questions and how they really are nestled right in the center of this continuum where they are attempting to find people who are at risk of a disability. So we hypothesized that you would see significantly different variation between surveys. I already mentioned these surveys were all from 2011, or in the case of the SIP, it was the SIP 2008 Wave 10, but they're reference periods were all within 2011. And we used SAS and complex survey design methodology to come up with standard errors and prevalence estimates with the weights provided by each survey. This starts to become relevant because when you deal with very large populations, large samples, depending on the software and the measurement, the standard error measurement system you're going to use, you will get different results. And I'll start to pull all of this together towards the end in our conclusion when I talk about this variation. This figure presents the counts and percentages of people with disabilities using those six questions across each survey from 2011. You'll see that the ACS was on the lowest end with 27 million and approximately 12% of people having a disability, and the NHIS was on the highest end with 39 million or 17.1% of people having a disability. These results were all significantly different, both in percent and count. Using the weights, we were able to find that with factors that were included in the weighting scheme, which includes age, race, gender, ethnicity, those basic demographic counts were very close. They were within half a million. I note in the asterisks that we had approximately 231 million people who were 18 and over and part of the non-institutionalized civilian population. It was really when we started to look at factors, including these disability estimates that were not a part of the weighting scheme, that you began to see greater range and variation. Okay. This figure presents the age distribution across survey and age group stratified by survey for each of those four surveys. Most of these differences within strata are significantly different, but they're overall very similar and comparable. You begin to see at 65 and over on the far right-hand side of the figure a larger amount of variation, but this again is only several percentage points. This is similar to what we would have expected to find in the literature, that almost half of the population with disabilities identified using these questions are 55 and over. When we began to compare the underlying samples captured by these surveys that were then weighted to give you the estimates I just showed you, we began to find that if the underlying age distribution of a sample for a given survey was younger or older than the Census Bureau estimates of the overall population from 2010, you could begin to predict how that weighting would skew the overall weighted disability estimates I just showed you. So for two of our surveys, the CPS and the NHIS, their underlying distributions were younger for that year, and therefore their weighted estimate went up. This, combined with the fact that disability is highly dependent on age, means that you begin to see not causal but associations that may drive under and over reporting across these surveys. When we looked at gender, race, and ethnicity, we found that it was generally very consistent at 53% female, 82% white, and 9.5% Hispanic. I didn't provide any bar charts with that. Just we thought that the next step would be to look at specific social factors, or social determinants of health, and look at whether or not those types of disparities were consistently presented. We found that we looked at employment. I think I presented here employment, self-reported health, and poverty. And the magnitude and direction of these differences were all consistent across survey. Presented here are the percent employed for people with and without self-reported difficulties across those four surveys. Keep in mind that this is ages 18 and over. The variation you see actually becomes even smaller when you look at a more standardized segment of the population, like 18 to 64, where you'd expect higher employment rates. However, we found that, you know, while these differences were statistically significant, they were very close. This is a figure presenting the self-reported health categorized to people reporting excellent or very good health. Across the three surveys of the CPS, the SIP, and the NHIS, the American Community Survey does not have a question on self-reported health. That's why it's not presented here. Again, you see similar amounts of variation in the percentages that you would with employment. This figure presents, for the four surveys, the percent of people with and without self-reported difficulties or disabilities living in poverty. Again, these disparities were fairly similar across survey. Having looked at a series of social factors, one of the next steps we thought would be valuable to explore would be geography. And while each of these surveys states that you should not be using their geographic categorizations for estimation, we find that a lot of our work with knowledge translation and technical assistance involves specific state agencies asking for counts, prevalence rates within their state. So what you'll see in the next few slides are maps of the United States for the ACS, the CPS, and the NHI, the ACS, the CPS, and the SIP. The NHIS does not release geography variables without additional request. You'll see by region, the coloring of these maps is similar. So the darker the blue color, the higher the percentage of people reporting a difficulty or disability is in that given state. So this is the map for the ACS. This is the map for the CPS. And again, you will see for the most part, the South and the Midwest tends to have the highest percentage of people self-reporting a difficulty. If you take a look at Nevada and Utah, and I'm just going to bump back, you'll begin to see that that region has a little bit more variation in that you're going to get a larger difference in the self-reported difficulty between those two surveys.
Eric, can you describe that variation?
Yes. The variation you see in the ACS is such that in Nevada, you have more people self-reporting a difficulty in the ACS than in the CPS, whereas in Utah, you have fewer people reporting a difficulty in Utah in the ACS than in the CPS. The variation in the SIP is similar to the other two surveys. There are more people reporting a difficulty in the South and Midwest, the greatest percentage in Nevada and Utah than the other, a greater percentage in Nevada and Utah than the other two surveys. What I thought would summarize this type of geographic variation the most was to present an additional map that is here that presents the highest three states per survey that have self-reported difficulties. For several of the surveys, they reported the same state. So West Virginia had the highest percentage of people with disabilities across all three surveys. Oklahoma was the second highest in the CPS and the SIP. However, across each of these surveys, their top three states tended to vary fairly dramatically. This is a similar map presenting the lowest three states by survey. Each of the surveys presents or reports different states for each with the lowest percentages of people with self-reported difficulties. So there needs to be a lot of caution when using these surveys to come up with counts and percentages of people with disabilities by state. Further, there needs to be a lot of caution if you're going to use geography as a controlling factor in any models and analyses. This is about the first area where we found substantial variation that sort of was worth highlighting and brought caution to what we were doing. I'm going to skip this slide, but this was a table. This figure, this is a table presenting in tabular format what I just showed you across those three maps. So in conclusion, we found substantial and significant variation in self-reported difficulty across survey. This replicated previous work over the last few decades that really found that almost all survey design effects begin to show create significantly different variation in estimation. We found weighting factors and the underlying unweighted sample distributions contributed to this variation. The magnitude and direction of differences were similar for demographic and social factors. This variation and the overall estimation was highly dependent on age, and that really needs to be included in all future analyses for our work. And we found that while the geographic variation was consistent by region, it was highly variable by state. We out of time. I think I've highlighted most of the main points of our work. What I was going to end on was a discussion of the fact that while a lot of these differences were significantly different, whether or not those differences have policy relevance is another discussion entirely. And from the perspective of an advocate, I can see that having such great range in the counts and percentage across survey complicates things. But from the standpoint of, for example, a researcher who's looking at studying disparities, we see a lot more similarity, and the findings are a lot more comparable and may not be as much of concern. Thank you very much.